Sicha for Parsha Yisrei in Chelek Gimel, Volume 3 of Lakutei Shichas. This is the Parsha of Matan Torah, and it is well known from the Rebbe's talks over the years that the change that took place as a result of Matan Torah, of the giving of the Torah, was that before God came down to Mount Sinai, there was a decree, a heavenly decree, that said that heavens belong to God and the earth belongs to man. Which means to say that there is a gap between heaven and earth, that they are separate, and that that which is heavenly cannot come down to earth, and that which is earthy cannot rise to heaven, can't become godly. So there are two distinct worlds. As it says, Hashamayim Shamayim Lashem, the heavens are for God, V'ha'aretz Nasan L'bnei Adam, and the earth he gave to the children of man. So that Ruchnius and Gashmius, the spiritual and the physical, the godly and the physical, could not meet and certainly could not interchange. One could not become the other. And that's why the mitzvahs performed before the giving of the Torah, as we know that the Avos observed all the mitzvahs before they were given, even though they also used physical objects with which to do the mitzvah, yet the object, the physical material which they used in performing the mitzvah, did not become godly, did not become holy, because godliness could not permeate and settle into the physical object. So that the Avos, when they performed the mitzvah, their primary or even exclusive purpose was to bring godliness into the world in the spiritual. And the fact that they used a material substance with which to do the mitzvah, that's only because they were so devoted in their complete devotion to God. For them, the devotion was both soul and body. Even their body, the limbs of their body, were completely devoted of their own accord to godliness. And so when they used the physical object, it was only because their body was so godly that it involved the physical object as well. But the object, the Gashmi, could not carry the godliness of the mitzvah, so that after the mitzvah was performed, the physical object remained physical. It didn't become holy and could be thrown away. As the Medrash says, the Zohar says, that Yaakov Avinu fulfilled the mitzvah of tefillin by using the sticks that he put before the sheep. So what he did was he peeled the bark in a circular fashion, a strip of bark spiraling down the stick, so that it had the appearance of white stripes followed by black stripes, like the arm, the look of the arm when it has tefillin wound around it. So that when he wanted to accomplish the spiritual experience that is tefillin, he used the physical object, the sticks, with which to express it in the physical. But the physical was only the vehicle for the spiritual experience, and that's why the object, the sticks, after he was finished with using them, he threw them away, because there was nothing holy about them. The holiness did not permeate and did not settle into the physical object, which explains a very fundamental subject, a very fundamental issue in the performance of mitzvahs. When the Avos performed the mitzvah and they used a physical object, and the object was not going to become godly, it was merely a tool, a means, a method by which the spiritual experience took place, that is why the physical object that they used didn't need any particular properties, didn't require any particular dimension or size or quality, because the object itself was really insignificant, unimportant, and therefore its condition was even less important. So when Yaakov used sticks, the sticks didn't have to be of any particular type, it didn't have to be any particular size or any particular duration. Whereas when we do mitzvahs today, after Matan Torah, since the objective is now to bring godliness into the physical object, which was not the case then, but now it is an essential part of the mitzvah to bring godliness into the physical, into the object with which we're doing the mitzvah, that's why today for us the condition of the physical is absolutely crucial. Because now the physical has to be a keli. The physical object with which we do the mitzvah now has to be receptive. It has to be capable of carrying the godliness that each mitzvah presents. So that in order for a pair of tefillin, a physical tefillin, for example, to be able to carry the holiness that is the godliness of tefillin, they have to have a certain size. They have to be hollow, they have to have parchment scrolls, they have to be four parchment scrolls, they have to be written a certain way. The whole thing has to be built and made to specifications, because without those specifications, the object is not receptive, cannot carry, cannot contain or retain the godliness that is tefillin. The same is true with matzah, and the same is true with the menorah. There has to be a certain amount of time that it's lit, it has to be lit from the right side, from evening time, in evening time, and so on, so that all of these details are now important, because without them, the physical object doesn't benefit the way it's supposed to benefit. Now that the Torah has been given, and godliness can and should permeate the physical object. This makes it necessary to draw another conclusion, and that is that before the giving of the Torah, when the godly, the spiritual, was in heaven, and the physical was not receptive to the godly, to the spiritual, it meant that the mitzvahs that were performed then were limited to the spiritual. They were limited to being high. They could not come down to a world that was low. And that means that the mitzvah was not expressing the essence of God, because God's essence is not limited to being high or to being low. He is both or neither, because Atzmus, the essence of God, is the true infinite, or the truly infinite, and that means that it has no restrictions, no limits, not even the limit of being high, not even the limit of being limitless. So that now, when we're doing mitzvahs that do permeate into the physical, that means that there's a godliness being expressed, being revealed in the mitzvah that transcends the notion of high and low, and is therefore not limited to being high. Or in different words, before the giving of the Torah, what was revealed was the spiritual or godly part of the mitzvah, but not God's presence in the mitzvah. The godly part of the mitzvah, the spiritual part of the mitzvah, was limited to being spiritual, and therefore it was incompatible with the physical world. Now, after Matan Torah, when God put himself into the mitzvah, makes himself available in the mitzvah, and he himself is certainly not limited, God forbid, to any limits at all, not even the limit of being high or of being spiritual, so that the mitzvah can now permeate the physical object, because we're now talking about a whole new kind of mitzvah. So it's not just a change in intention. It's not just a change in objective, that before Matan Torah there was no desire to permeate the physical, And now after Matan Torah, there is that objective or that goal, but more than that, the change is more than just in the objective, because in order to achieve this objective, you have to reveal a whole different part of God. That part of God which is not limited to either physical or spiritual, and therefore can combine them both. This is reflected also in the Ten Commandments that were given at Har Sinai. And that's why we see that the commandments are composed of two very different kinds of commandments. Anechi Hashem Elikecha, I am God, your God, the first commandment. Le'yielecha, you should have no other gods before me. These commandments contain the highest and most profound concepts of the oneness of God, of God's oneness. These are very spiritual, godly mitzvahs. The other commandments are so simple, as for example, the commandments of don't kill and don't steal, which are understandable and obviously necessary even by human reckoning. So the fact that God brings them together and puts them together is to tell us and to show us that this decree that existed before the giving of the Torah, that the Elyonim lo yerdu lamata and the Tachtonim lo yalu lamayla, the Elyonim, that the decree that what is above does not come down and what is down does not go up, has been cancelled, and now the opposite is true, that that which is above comes down and that which is below goes up. In the mitzvahs, in the commandments, we see it this way. The Elyonim, the high, are those commandments like, I am God, your God, you should have no other God. They have to come down, which means to say that they have to be the motivation and the force behind the low commandments of not stealing and not killing. So that even those mitzvahs, like not stealing and not killing, which are understandable even to human reasoning, and even rational human minds find these commandments necessary, yet when we fulfill those commandments, it shouldn't be only for the rational, intelligent, logical reason, but it should also be because of I am God, your God, and you shall have no other gods. So that the fact that it's God's will, that should be the motivation even in the fulfillment of those mitzvahs that we obviously need to fulfill for human reasons. Because if we observe the commandment not to kill and not to steal only for human reasons, then there is a very real danger that they will get tampered with. Aside the fact that self-love can twist any reasoning, any human reasoning, to the point where people can actually rationalize and turn a sin into a mitzvah, not only make a sin permissible, but actually turn it into a virtue, start to consider it a mitzvah, and that in the literal transgression of stealing or killing, and certainly in its more subtle forms, like not embarrassing someone in public, which is considered a form of killing, or misleading someone with bad advice, which is considered or giving a false impression, which is considered stealing, gnevas das. In this, certainly, the person who has a little bit of a bias because of self-love will not notice at all and will consider himself completely virtuous. Just as when a person puts his finger near his eye, he can block out the whole world. And that's obviously because his finger is so close to his eye. So a person being close to himself, a person being committed to himself, involved with himself, that self-love can block out the reality that is infinitely bigger than himself. So that even if we have a strong conviction on human rational basis that one should not kill and one should not steal, there is no guarantee that that will actually happen once a human being with his biases starts to tamper with that conviction. And in addition to that, even if you could avoid the corruption or the rationalization that allows a person to steal and to kill and consider himself righteous, in addition to that problem, the other reason that we have to fulfill the mitzvah of not stealing and not killing, because it is God's will, is because our main objective, the mission of a Jew, is to bring godliness into the world. And to bring godliness into the world means that you have to express God's will in your behavior, in your actions. So that by not killing and not stealing, because this is God's will, God has an active voice and an active effect on your behavior and through you on the whole world. So that even things that we could do for obvious human reasons, we should permeate even that with God's will and God's instruction. And this is what the Gemara meant when it said that if the Torah had not been given, we would have learned many virtues from animals. For example, we would have learned modesty from a cat. We would have learned not to steal from an ant. So what does this mean? It means that if Torah hadn't been given with the effect of removing the decree that separated God from the earth, the godly from the physical, then we would, in fact, using human intelligence, learn modesty from a cat and so on, and not stealing from an ant, but it would have remained merely a human experience and a human act. So we would have moral commitments, and we would learn it from nature or from animals. It would come from the world, but it would not in any way bring God into the world. But now that the Torah was given, then even those things that we would have or could have learned from nature, we now imbue it with a higher purpose, with a higher goal, and that is to make God manifest in the world through His will. So that's how the higher commandments, the commandment of I am God your God, has to come down and become the motivation for the lower commandments, the not killing and the not stealing. Now the lower commandments also have to rise and become part of the upper world, of the higher world, and that is that even a person who is capable of killing and of stealing, and in order to prevent them from killing and stealing, they have to be commanded, thou shalt not steal, not kill. And in order to make it more convincing, the commandment had to be given in thunder and in lightning, with the entire drama of what went on there at Mount Sinai, with God standing over the mountain and screaming at the person, shouting at the person, don't kill, don't steal. So we're talking about a person who's on a very basic, very primitive level, yet even from such a person, God expects that they come up to the higher world and participate in the understanding and in the knowledge of the oneness of God, including even the highest level of Chachma. As the Rambam explains in his introduction to the Meir Nevuchim, as that godly wisdom, Chochmas HaLikus, comes as a conclusion, as the apex, after all the other wisdoms that precede it. And in the knowledge of God itself, in this highest of all wisdoms, in the knowledge of God itself, it's not enough to know Elikecha, Anochi, Hashem Elikecha, I am God, your God, but you have to know Hashem also, I am God. And not only do you have to know God, but you even have to know Anochi, that part of God which is the essence of God that doesn't have a name, and which God can only express by saying I, as the devil will soon explain. So from the lower world, from the level of thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not steal, which means people who need to be convinced, you have to prevail on them not to kill and not to steal, even they are expected to participate in Anochi Hashem Elokecha, in the first two commandments, that they also should understand a little bit of the oneness of God, which the Rambam says is the highest of all wisdoms. The first three words of the Ten Commandments contains this message that we've just read from the Sicha, and that is Anochi Hashem Elokecha, three levels of understanding of godliness. Elokim, the name Elokim, refers to the part of God that is invested in creation, the part of God that gets involved in the act of creation and the maintenance of creation. So in every created being, there is this investment, there is that part of God that is invested in that being that makes it what it is. And since all creatures are different from each other, everything has its unique existence, unique properties, so we have the name for God, which is in a plural, Elokim, Elokim Kedoshim, plural, because God invests himself differently in each of his creations to give each of the creations a uniqueness. And so there are many expressions of this part of God that is in creation, to the point where the gematria of Elokim is the same as Hateva, the word for nature. So Elokim refers to that part of God that devotes itself, that adjusts itself, tailors itself to the creation. And that's why we find that the name Elokim is personalized, with a chof at the end, for example. Elokecha, your God. As in the Ten Commandments, Anochi Hashem Elokecha. Or we find Elokeinu, or Elokechem, our God, your God. Why is this personalized? Because this is that part of God that adjusts itself to each person, to each condition, to each creature individually. Then there is the name Hashem. Anochi Hashem Elokecha. I am God, your God. The name Hashem refers to that part of God that does not get involved in the actual creation, because it is above all restrictions and all limits, and does not tailor itself, does not adjust itself to the created being. And that's why the word Hashem, the Hebrew spelling of it, contains the letters for Hoya, Heva, Veyihia, was, is, and will be. And all three words are contained in this one word, in the name of God, because he is, was, and will be at the same time. Past, present, and future, all wrapped into one at the same time, which means completely beyond the properties of the physical universe. Higher than time, higher than nature. And that's why when Moshe came to Paday and said, the God of Israel says to let my people go, Paday said, I don't know this God. I know Elokim, but I don't know Hashem. Or when the Oves spoke to Paday, they said, Elokim Yane Shloim Paday. Because Paday could relate to Elokim. But when it came to Hashem, he said, Mi Hashem Asher Eshma Bekeli, Lo Yadaiti Es Hashem. Who is God that I should listen to him? I don't know God. And yet in many cases, the Egyptians and Paday referred to God. this is the finger of God, so on. But they were referring to Elikim, Etzba Elikim, the part of God that is in nature, but not the part of God that is above nature. Then there is the third word, Anoichi, which is really the first word, the third level, represented by the word Anoichi. Anoichi is God himself, that has no name, that cannot be contained in any name, but is God himself. And that's the meaning of Anoichi Hashem Elikecha. By the giving of the Torah, it was made possible that the power of Anoichi, which is higher than all titles and higher than all names, higher than all restrictions and than all limitations, that Anoichi can bring about a merging of Hashem and Elikecha, of Hashem, which is a spiritual, limitless godliness, and Elikecha, which is the finite and limited godliness of that is in nature. So in order for the level of Elikim to join with the level of Hashem, there had to be the Anoichi. And the Anoichi was revealed only by the giving of the Torah. And that's what makes it possible to join, to merge, the commandments of not killing and not stealing with the first commandments of I am God, your God, and you shall have no other gods before me. A combination of human condition with divine godly motivation.